that's located at 136th and Holgate. It is being land banked, but the Parks Department made arrangements with a construction training company where they would go in and use that facility to teach people how to use heavy equipment. And over this past winter, they've done a lot of clearing and leveling of the land. And then it's my understanding that it is being seeded so that in the springtime, there will at least be a flat, grassy area instead of an unusable pile of dirt. And I applaud that. And I would like to get Clatsop Butte on the list for similar private-public cooperation so that we can begin to make use of something that currently is only used for illegal ATV activities and negative uses. And I'm a firm believer that if you promote positive uses, you can push the negative uses out. I've appreciated the process. I'd like to make particular note of David Yamashita, who led this master planning process. He's one of probably 15 or 20 people that I could mention, but I'd make particular note of his contributions. And thank you for the time.
Thank you, sir.
Hello, my name is John Simonson. I live one block from Clatsop Butte Park on 152nd, which would be the main way of getting up to the park. I'm married. I have three children, 19, 4, and 5. So that's an interesting mix for you. Initially, I was skeptical about what was going to go on up there. I'm like baseball diamonds and lights and thousands of people. I no longer have those worries. The master plan process is one that's well thought out. You get skeptics like myself and proponents like Paul in there, and we talk about it and figure out what the best solution is. The committee came up with a plan that is well-balanced for all the stakeholders. It meets the needs of the closest neighbors, and it balances them well against the needs for the region and fields and other activities. It has a good mix of passive and active activities. It has an open field that can be set up in many different configurations for a variety of field sports. There are walking trails and an area for dogs to be off-leash. Most importantly, the park has the potential to be hooked up to the Springwater Trail Corridor. This potential for connection would allow many people to visit this park and never have to get in their cars. Clatsop Butte Park will be an asset to the local community, to the region, and the city. Because of the limited number of parks in the area, I would suggest that this park be made a priority for development. We bought our house when Katie wasn't even 2 and Michael was learning to crawl. Now Katie is 5, Michael's 4. I'd appreciate it if they could use the park before they're 7 and 8. I understand that dollars are tight these days, but perhaps building this park could be part of Portland's economic recovery. To create and save jobs in building it and to help draw more people to the region by offering better amenities. One of the reasons we bought our house where we did is because there is the potential for a very nice park at the top of our hill. It's time to make that park a reality. And perhaps on a nice sunny day, if the city council wants to take a field trip and see just how beautiful this property is, I'd be happy to show them around. Thank you.
Commissioner. Thank you both. I have a question.
Sure.
So thank you for your great work, and I apologize in advance to the Parks Commissioner and to both of you and everyone who worked on this to sort of gently push back. But on the other ones, I have a policy and personal obsession with food security and gardening. I didn't see explicitly community gardens on this master plan. Did I miss it? I saw it explicitly mentioned on the other two we're considering today.
There are a lot of specific items that were discussed, but with guidance from the Parks Bureau, we left a lot of the topics more broad.
Okay.
Like it has hard court sports area. It doesn't specify whether it's tennis or basketball, and I believe gardens certainly were discussed, and there's certainly acreage for discussion, but we left those more broadly.
For the future decision. Okay, thanks.
And I appreciate those comments, Mayor Adams. As the new Parks Commissioner, when we got to our retreat about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I laid out 3 visions for what I'd like to see us expand into. One is improving opportunities for youth sports, and that dovetails with Dr. Gray and I talked about the other day in a regional soccer facility, which I think has great promise. And the second is expanding our capacity on community gardens.
Oh, good.
We have an enormous backlog of asks, and we have an opportunity to park them both in parks, in carefully selected areas. I'm looking at Mike Kauk as I say this, carefully targeted, select areas within our parks, in our public schools, and in other places. So I have my commitment that we will aggressively pursue that.
This might be an opportunity for maybe early use.
So if I could also just identify the other members of the committee that you serve with, Mark Brown, Lorraine Gonzalez, Chad Sorensen, Vinu Rao, Bob Salinger, Matt Clark, Bill Hawkins, and Stacy Fleck. Thank you all for your service to our city.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are we to public testimony? Or?
I think we're other people signed up?
One person.
One person signed up?
Yes, Linda Robinson.
Good morning, Linda. Welcome to the City Council.
I will keep my comments short, but I wanted to address the question of, you know, the fact that funding is not available. Funding has not been available for a long time. Some of these have been public properties designated as parks long before we were annexed. So some of these have been waiting for development for 20 and 30 and more years. And I was one of the people who pushed really hard to move ahead and do the master plans, because we had looked into possibilities and grant opportunities. And every time we found one that might be a source, we had to have a master plan in place before we could apply for the funds. So we pushed very hard to get these three large undeveloped parks to get a master plan so that we would be ready when an opportunity came to get funding for these parks. And I felt very strongly they should all come to City Council together. I mean, it's three big parks in East Portland, but they're not like they're right close to each other. One is way north, one is way south, and the other is in the middle. And these are three very large undeveloped parks that have been waiting a long time. And so we're glad we now have, or soon hope we now have, a master plan approved by you. And when opportunity is there, we can move forward.
And I really appreciate that. And with the Parks Foundation, the Parks Board, and the citywide Parks Advisory Group all focused on this, I think we'll put our heads together and find a way to get this done. Yesterday, we did raise the question during the PDC briefing when you were here about a TIF available for the Gateway Park.
Yeah.
And we'll be as creative as we have to.
Good. Thank you.
All right. Unless there's additional council discussion, Carla, would you please call the roll?
Fritz? This is wonderful, and it's a credit to the Parks Commissioner and the previous Parks Commissioner and to the community in East Portland for making sure that we do this important planning work. And thank you, Linda Robinson, for pointing out why the planning is important, why it's important to invest, because until we have these master plans, it's very difficult to get the money from sources outside the government to fund the improvements. The improvements will be about $30 million altogether for these three parks. And so I'm hoping in the future, when we have master plans coming through, that we will be able to identify future sources of money at the same time, so that we have a strategic plan for whether it's 20 years or 30 years or 2 years, as the optimistic parent hoped we could get it done, that we do have a plan for how we're going to pay for these things. Because it's not fair to have communities and have citizens put a lot of time into planning and then have the plan sit on the shelf. And so I believe this council has a commitment to getting things done and to not allowing good work to sit on the shelf. And clearly it's not going to be immediately, but we need to put a lot of effort into funding the improvements to provide amenities for citizens in every neighborhood, because parks are basic services and every neighborhood should have the basic service of a community park where you can go and meet, sit with your neighbors in our space rather than my space in my backyard. So I'm very happy to vote aye.
Fish.
Well, today marks the third significant event in a trilogy that I think manifests this council's interest and support for addressing issues of livability east of 82nd. And I think we should take a moment just to acknowledge all three. The first was the East Portland Action Plan, which was a visioning process that the community working with planning came forward with and is a tremendous roadmap helping us to decide how to fund key priorities going forward. Last Saturday, Commissioner Saltzman and I cut the ribbon on the new aquatic center at the East Portland Community Center. Dan Saltzman said in his remarks that he believes that when all the numbers are crunched, this will end up being the greenest, most sustainable public pool in America. And it significantly is the first pool built east of 82nd Street with indoor pool with public resources. And then third, we have today. We have three master plans for three parks that will greatly enhance the livability of East Portland. The bulk of the hard work here has been done by others before I became the Parks Commissioner. So I want to tip my hat both to Commissioner Saltzman and his team, as well as to the talented professionals at the Parks Bureau, who I think have set kind of the model on how you do community outreach and participation. And so it makes it fun for us at events like this to hear all the accolades, but we're really, what we're hearing is people compliment the professionals in our bureaus who do the good work, and it certainly makes us proud to hear that. And I'm particularly grateful for all the citizen time and energy. Again, I want to just note that particularly during these tough times, we can't do our jobs at parks without all the thousands of volunteers and tens of thousands of volunteer hours, which help us do our work better. And so I want to again thank all the members of the project advisory committees and all those who are so passionate about parks and natural areas in East Portland. I didn't get a chance to also acknowledge another member of the consultant team that worked on this, which is Walker Macy Landscape Architects and Planners, and I want to acknowledge their great work on Clatsop Butte. I've mentioned earlier the names of the parks professionals who are involved. Thanks again to them. I want to acknowledge the work of the two folks on my team, Hannah Kuhn and Emily Hicks. And I also will close by saying that this is sort of the fun part, the visioning piece. Now the challenge is how we're going to fund it. And you have my commitment that we will be a creative and persistent in finding ways to do this, and whether we do it in a staged way or whether we are able to hit a home run, we will continually search for the dollars to bring this vision into reality. And so today I'm proud to vote aye.
Leonard?
Well, I too am very pleased with this work, not just as a member of the council, but as a person who will benefit personally from particularly the Clatsop Butte Park, living within walking distance of that wonderful space. So I appreciate the work of Commissioner Fish, all the citizens who have dedicated their time to getting this right. Aye.
Adams.
Well, there was a time when City Council had extra money, and it seems so long ago, but the last City Council had, because of a surging economy at that time, we had more money than we had forecasted. And it was our intent to use a large amount of that extra money to invest in improvements in East Portland. And as Commissioner Fish mentioned, the East Portland Pool is part of that, the action plan. But there was also money that was devoted to transportation improvements, and the vast majority of that money went to East Portland as well. 92nd Avenue, 82nd Avenue with ODOT, 122nd Avenue, improvements on safer routes to school, to and from schools, especially elementary schools. So my congratulations to Commissioner Fish for bringing it home, Commissioner Saltzman for his good work and the great team at planning, but especially the citizens who take time out of their busy days and evenings to make sure that we do it right. Happy to vote aye. All right, Council Item 259 is approved. That moves us to time certain at 10:30. Carla, could you please read the title for Council Item 260?
Endorse a no-wake zone for Holgate Channel and a non-motorized zone for the Ross Island Lagoon.
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to invite forward at this point Mike Houck from Urban Green Spaces Institute, Travis Williams from Willamette Riverkeeper, and Bob Salinger from Audubon Society of Portland. This may be the most formidable threesome since the heart of the lineup of the 1927 Yankees. I have just some very brief remarks to set this up because you gentlemen are the experts and will be walking us through the proposal. Ross Island is actually a group of four islands that are roughly a mile and a half long by a quarter mile wide and together form a unique freshwater lagoon. Located just south of our downtown core, Ross Island provides significant habitat for all kinds of fish and wildlife that live along the Willamette River. It is also one of the most scenic areas within the city of Portland. The Hullgate Channel is the narrow body of water found between Ross Island and the east banks of the river where the Oaks Bottom Wildlife Refuge and the Springwater Trail are located. When you look at this part of the river from a regional perspective, you can see how it is uniquely shaped to serve as a resting and feeding area for birds, fish, and other wildlife. Now, the Ross Island Vision Team, which includes members of the Urban Green Space Institute, Willamette Riverkeeper, and Audubon Society of Portland, has prepared this wonderful visioning document, which has been distributed to all members of council, and has helped us and other citizens to consider and see Ross Island as part of a watershed, as part of a wildlife system, and as fundamentally a part of our city. We have some other folks will be testifying after you, but I want to turn to you, Mike Houck, to explain the no-wake zone, what it does and what it doesn't, because there has been some confusion on that point, and to lead our discussion. Mike Houck.
Actually, I think Travis is going to lead off, and then Bob and I'll chime in if that's okay with you.
Okay. Well, my name is Travis Williams. I'm executive director of Willamette Riverkeeper. We work on water quality and habitat issues throughout the Willamette Basin. We are here today, obviously, in support of this resolution to create a no-wake zone and a non-motorized zone within the lagoon at Ross Island. What this would do, what our proposal is to the Marine Board, which will go in about a week and a half, is it proposes to create a no-wake zone from the southern end of Ross Island on Hullgate Channel all the way to the northern end, about a two-mile stretch. And this, in essence, means that you can go 5 miles an hour and under in a powerboat and create no wake, far different than some of the conditions that we have out there during peak use times today. In addition to that, inside the lagoon itself, where significant restoration activities are undergoing and will be undergoing for some time, in addition to the abundance of wildlife that is there at present, we are proposing a non-motorized zone for the lagoon where a person can take a kayak or canoe and go in there without motorized boat use. And we do this for several reasons. For us, it comes from a perspective of believing that we need to protect the habitat investment and restoration that is occurring inside the lagoon. We also believe there is a very real safety issue that occurs during key times of the year, and we have multiple testimonials to that. And incidentally, I should say that we have, at this point, close to 400 co-petitioners for the application that will go to the Marine Board next week, so just for some perspective. In addition, I think there's a real aesthetic issue when you look at the fact that we have 26.5 miles of main stem river from Oregon City down to the Columbia where one can use motorized craft. We feel in this relatively small area that it isn't a tremendous amount to ask for a non-motorized zone in the lagoon and a no-wake zone. So I'll leave it at that and turn it over to Mike. Thank you.
Commissioner Fish, I appreciate the fact that you brought up the envisioning Ross Island document because this really is an issue that's much broader than just establishing the no-wake and non-motorized zone. It's part of a larger vision for Ross Island, for the four islands, the channel and adjacent Oaks Bottom Wildlife Refuge. As I sat down this morning to write up my formal comments that I sent in to you, you have copies of, it occurred to me that it was 30 years ago, almost to the day that I testified before City Council, when Ross Island Sand and Gravel had asked for the permits for gravel removal. And what we were seeking was a buffer zone around the Great Blue Heron nesting colony, which is now occupied by a bald eagle. So 30 years, a lot has happened in the intervening time, not the least of which is a much greater appreciation for the role of natural resources like this in a truly sustainable city. The resolution that I'm hoping you will all agree to pass today is replete with all of the advantages of establishing a no-wake zone. So I'm not going to go into that. I would like to make just two main points. One is this is as much about public safety as it is about any environmental protection. Of the 350 to 400 letters of support we've received, a number of them describe incidents where, in one case, two-person outrigger canoe was literally cut in two by a speedboat in this channel. It's a very narrow channel. It's totally appropriate to have one area in the city, one area in the lower Willamette where you can take a canoe and kayak and not have to worry about your kids being thrown out of the boat due to wake or possibly cut in two. The second point is what the no-wake zone will not do, because you'll probably hear from some folks who say it will preclude access to the Holgate Channel, and that is not the case. It will not preclude commercial craft in the Holgate Channel or Ross Island Lagoon, as they are exempt. It will not preclude fishing in the Holgate Channel or Ross Island Lagoon. Fishers will still be able to motor the Holgate Channel. It remains to be seen how the final application will read, but there will be access potentially to the lagoon as well. Obviously, you can motor down the channel. You could row into the lagoon to fish. So fishers will not be excluded in any way, and it will not preclude motorized craft in the Holgate Channel. All it will do is simply ask that they slow down, and you can go through the channel in a motorized craft. I have a boat myself. When I go through there, I go through 4 to 5 miles an hour, and we would not be precluded from using the channel. So we hope you pass the resolution this morning. I'll pass it on to Bob.
Good morning. My name is Bob Salinger. I'm the Conservation Director for the Audubon Society of Portland, and we too strongly support this resolution and establishing a no-wake zone in the Holgate Channel and a non-motorized zone in the Ross Island Lagoon. We really see this as one step of many in managing this amazing resource that we have in the middle of downtown Portland. And it's a resource that has been neglected and abused over the years. This is an opportunity to really bring it back to life and protect it. We've taken many, many paddle trips out there that have been, frankly, hazardous because of the high-speed activity. And to some degree, high-speed activity in many ways is going to preclude low-speed activity. As we get more and more rapid movement through the lagoon and through the channel, increasingly you're not going to see kayakers and canoers in there because it just isn't safe. And I know as a trip leader, I'm increasingly concerned about that. So we do strongly endorse this. It is first and foremost, as Mike said, about safety. It's about aesthetics. It's about going to a place and being able to see and hear the birds. There aren't too many places where you can actually go on the river and have that kind of experience. And as it gets louder and busier in there, the opportunities to actually enjoy nature, the reason that we set it aside, are disappearing. Secondarily, it's about the habitat, protecting the habitat from erosion. There's a lot of things we need to do out there to accomplish that. This is one. It's only one step. And it's about maintaining the wildlife populations, because although many of the species out there do coexist with human development, the more you increase that, the less you'll see them. And some of them are sensitive, including the eagles and the herons and some of the songbirds. One thing I would really highlight is this is a step among many. And we've heard today about how there isn't much money to do much right now. But I would also highlight today that there is opportunity out on Ross Island, and it's through partnerships. Mike, Travis, and I started the Friends of Ross Island. We have over 300 members. Many of them are here today. You can see a lot of stickers out in the audience. They came out to support this as well. And we see incredible opportunity. I think Paul put it very well earlier, testifying about Clatsop Butte, when he said that when you establish good uses, it drives out bad uses. Good activity negates the bad activity. And I think there's a real opportunity on Ross Island to do that. And so moving forward, I think all three of us are very excited about opportunities to partner with parks, to go out there and start doing some restoration activities, clean up some garbage, and also just establish a general atmosphere of protection and conservation and appreciation that I think will reduce some of the challenges. And, I just want to highlight three people in the audience here today, because we have Jerry and Kate from Willamette Riverkeeper, and we have Mary Coolidge from Audubon, if y'all want to raise your hands for 1 second. We all have staff to contribute to that effort, working with Marissa over at Parks. Marissa, raise your hand. And I think it's really an amazing opportunity without a lot of money to go in and do some amazingly good things. So in conclusion, we totally endorse this resolution and look forward to working with the city on a lot of other things out there as well.
So, Mayor, we've by prior arrangement, we've limited the number of people who will be speaking in favor of this, but we ask that those who are here with stickers and support could stand just to show their support.
Please stand up.
Thank you for being here. Give yourselves a round of applause.
Travis, could we have one other invited guest to follow after we take some questions from my colleagues, but can you just once again state succinctly what it is you're asking us to do today and how it fits in with the next step of the process?
Right. So we're asking you to basically, with your resolution, to support the proposal that we are making to the Marine Board, which would create a no-wake zone from the southern end of Holgate Channel to the northern end and a non-motorized zone within Ross Island Lagoon. What happens next is we're preparing the proposal to the Marine Board, the Oregon State Marine Board, which regulates this activity, and that'll go in about a week and a half, and then they take about a six-month period. It'll be September or October of this year when they hear the proposal, assuming they accept it from us, and we believe they will. And at that time, they'll make a formal decision on whether to approve, modify, or disapprove this proposal.
And I think it's important to point out that the Marine Board will have a public process. There will be a public hearing and ample opportunity for folks to get their views on the record via the Marine Board.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike. So if you guys could hang around, we're going to have one more invited testimony, then we're going to take public testimony, and any questions that my colleagues have, we'll bring you back. I'd like to invite Emily Roth to come forward. She is the Portland Parks and Rec Natural Resources Planner who has been working on this project. Emily comes from an ecologist background and has contributed her leadership on this and many other City of Portland projects that protect and restore our natural areas. Emily, thanks for your great work, and go ahead.
Thank you. Mayor Adams and commissioners, as Commissioner Fish introduced me, I'm Emily Roth, Natural Resource Planner from Portland Parks and Rec. And I have been assisting with the petition to the Marine Board for the city. As many of you know, the Oregonian editorial board pushed the city last year to make this one of Mayor Adams' first agenda items. And so we are just following through. The proposed...
And we do everything that is...
Really? All the time. The proposed designation will assist in the overall strategy that Parks is working on to increase the biological diversity, habitat restoration, and restoring listed fish habitat along the Willamette River. Since the City of Portland accepted the donation of 44 acres from Ross Island Sand and Gravel last year, Parks has been able to establish a Willamette River ecologist, Mark Wilson. Mark is here. Can raise his hand. Great.
Mark.
Mark and I, plus the parks, we have been working not only to restore the habitat at Ross Island, but also Oaks Bottom Wildlife Refuge and the riparian area along the edge of the river. On the west side of the river, in partnership with BES, we have restored habitat for migratory birds and fish at Willamette Park and Powers Marine Park. The city has invested over $1 million in parks and projects for habitat and fish restoration in this part of the Willamette watershed. And not only has the city invested over $1 million, but we have hundreds of hours of volunteers that have turned out to remove invasive species and to plant trees, to pick up garbage, and to really take ownership of this part of the river. Besides the investment that the city has been making, Ross Island Sand and Gravel has also been under consent, restoring wetland habitat within the lagoon. The designation of no wake in Holgate Channel and non-motorized in Ross Island Lagoon will help protect these investments that the city and others have made. And it will also continue to assist the city in providing nature in the city for all our for all river and spring water on the Willamette users.
What's been the comments from Ross Island?
They have been pretty neutral. As you know, this resolution or this petition does not excludes commercial. So all of their operations will be able to be maintained. And Mike has had more of a...
Yeah.
communication with them.
Yeah, we specifically asked, and Bob Hamill Jr. said, I won't oppose it or support it. Just whatever. Okay. It doesn't matter.
Other questions from council?
I have a question on the not excluding commercial. Don't the jet boat rides go in here?
Yes, the jet boat riders do go in there.
So wouldn't that cause hazards for kayakers and others? I mean, how would they know that they need to hang on to their seats?
This was not a planted question.
I don't know if the owner from the jet boat group is here. He was at our presentation yesterday. There have been conversations with him and talking about what this would mean and proper behavior within the lagoon and all of those things. But it does at this point exempt them from...
It does not.
It does not exempt them. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Well, commercial is
commercial.
Exempted. So,
It's exempted from no wake. That is correct. So the jet boat is a commercial industry, Willamette Jet Boaters, and they will be exempt from no wake.
Will they be exempt from going into? Will they be allowed to go into the lagoon?
Yes, they will be allowed to go into the lagoon.
So doesn't that create a potential greater problem if kayakers and others are thinking that they've got this nice safe area and then this jet boat kind of zooms in out of nowhere and does its spin, which I have been in.
We will do our best to coordinate with them and to help us make this a great experience for boaters.
That has been discussion about that and you're working on it is the
yes.
answer that I'm hearing.
And
we
would welcome, because we view this, Commissioner Fritz, as a place where some quiet diplomacy may have some impact, and as the commissioner in charge of the river, we would be glad to partner with you to try to find an accommodation. But commercial uses are exempt from this, and in this particular resolution.
Yeah, I would like to see a tougher agreement achieved with the jet boat folks, or I shouldn't. Anybody that produces that kind of speed and wake, I shouldn't limit it to just an operator, but I'd like to, if it means that, like on other water bodies in the state, that we come up to an accommodation with them on time of day and number of trips, I would be very interested in helping whoever wants to sit down and do the diplomacy to achieve that.
Great. Thank you.
To be clear, the resolution doesn't prohibit motorized boats from going up slough, it says they can't throw a wake.
Correct.
So, I mean, they can traverse the length of the channel.
But these guys are exempted.
I thought you said they weren't exempted.
No, all boating, it will still be allowed in Holgate Channel. It will be non-wake, which is defined at 5 miles an hour or less.
I understand that, but the jet boats are not
exempted.
They are exempted or they're not?
They are
exempted from this because they are a commercial operation.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood you. I thought you said that they were included.
No.
They're exempted, sorry. And there's some legal reasons. This Mike, why don't you come up just to...
Or Travis.
I think the biggest issue here, actually, is that Andy Moose, who was one of the owners of Willamette Jet Boats, has indicated his willingness to talk with us about how to work this out. And he's also interested in interpretive opportunities and partnering with the city. And while I wouldn't always characterize our relationship as a rosy one across the board here with Willamette Jet Boats, I spoke with Andy yesterday, who came to our brown bag presentation, and he's very open to discussing how we can make this work for everybody. And my sense is that he's willing to go the next step.
I'd really like to provide the non-motorized, non-loud, exempted folks as much certainty on time of day, quietness, and such, if we could work out an arrangement with him so that if you're out at a certain day and a certain time, you know there might be motorized vehicles and other times would not be. It might be a voluntary agreement, but would not be allowed.
Right.
Yeah, the only thing I would add is echoing Bob's comment earlier. I think, over time, to some extent, I think there will be pressure brought to bear by the non-motorized folks if people are really getting out of line. So, and we have committed to working with actually other commercial craft, the Sternwheel of the Rose. We've talked with them. They support this, actually. We did our due diligence. We went to a lot of folks, including staff Jennings even, which, and you might be surprised to learn that they support it. They felt it was totally reasonable to have one section of the river, even though they sell motorized craft, available primarily for canoers and kayaks.
So if your negotiations are not fruitful, I encourage you to come back to council.
We certainly would be happy to do that.
Carla, do we have people signed up?
Yes, we have 16 people.
I need to alert the council that I have a prior engagement that I'm going to have to leave at some point for. I would also point out to those that have testified, a majority of the council has drafted this ordinance.
16.
So. How many is there any is there anyone here who has testified in opposition or raising questions or neutral about this issue? All right. I'm going to take prerogatives of the chair. Could I have those three that raised your hands in the back come forward?
I really just want to submit written testimony.
That's the place to do it. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. We have a lot of business to transact today. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Welcome to the City Council. You need only give your first and last name, and there's a timer in front of you to help guide the length of your comments.
Who stops and starts it?
Carla.
Oh, okay.
And you don't want to mess with Carla.
His daughter's name is Carly.
So, welcome.
Thank you. Council, thank you for allowing us to speak. My name is Bruce Hecht. I've been water skiing and recreating behind Ross Island and in the Holgate Channel for about 39 years. I may not look that old, but for about 39 years. And I currently, for the last 8 or 9 years, have been playing with my kids back there. And I told them last night that I was going to a council meeting this morning that says City Council of Portland doesn't want us to inner tube or play and recreate behind Ross Island anymore. And my 9-year-old started to cry. So I said, I'll go, I'll talk to him. I'm glad that the Audubon Society and everybody else brought up the issue of safety, because I'm quite concerned about safety behind Ross Island. As I mentioned, I've been water skiing and recreating back there for about 39 years and have never seen an accident. And I actually pulled the Oregon State Marine Board accident statistics, and there is no accident on record by the Oregon State Marine Board behind Ross Island in the Holgate Channel or the lagoon. There's a number of others around the Willamette River, but not in the Holgate Channel or the lagoon, and that's all online. Also, seems like the theme of the meeting and the news is costs and money and the economy, and I'm curious who's going to pay for all this. It's great to have volunteers go out and pick up garbage. I'll go out and volunteer and pick up garbage. But who's going to maintain the no wake signs? Who's going to install them? Who's going to pay for them? You talked about the jet boats, and you talked about Staff Jennings, and there's a number of other boat dealerships and a number of other businesses that pay taxes in Multnomah County that could suffer greatly by not having activity back there that's been going on for 100 years. They also, on the Audubon Society website, they talk about Ross Island being in the path of 100 bird species that use Ross Island as a migratory path, which is fantastic. I mean, my friend Don and I, we are back there 5 times a week during the summer, and we see deer, we see eagle, we see heron, we see everything back there. And with all the activity that's been going on Ross Island for 60 years, how come these things aren't all gone? How come the wildlife are not gone? It seems like they've learned to adapt, and there's eagles everywhere all the time back there. I don't think cutting the no-wake zone or making it a no-wake zone is going to have more birds come or more birds go away. I don't think it is going to pose a continued safety issue.
Thank you for your testimony.
May I just ask for a clarification, sir? What is the activity that you enjoy that would be in any way restricted under this resolution?
Water skiing and pulling my 9-year-old and my 12-year-old on an inner tube.
And are there any other places along the river that you can do that?
Well, the Oregon State Marine Board just closed a 26 or I don't know how many 14-mile stretch from Newburgh, Oregon to Oregon City for a number of these activities. Yes, there are a number of other places that we could go to water ski. The attractiveness behind Ross Island and the Holgate Channel, as the Audubon Society pointed out, it's a fairly narrow channel. It's protected by wind, and it's a lot more fun to go water skiing when the water is as smooth as possible and as calm as possible and not with 2 or 3 foot wind chop on there. And we're very sensitive to the kayakers and the rowers and the folks back there. The last thing I'd like to say in closing is...
Actually, your time's up.
But it has to deal with clothes. A safety issue.
Go ahead and give us your clothes.
If we take that stretch, that two-mile stretch, and say you can't boat or ski or wakeboard or inner tube back there, and take all those people, and whether it's 1 or 100, I have no idea, and move them out into the main channel, all that's going to do is clog that main channel and make it more unsafe for the canoers and the kayakers that are going to be coming from their docks on the west side to paddle back around. It's going to
Thank
be
you.
Less safe.
I appreciate it, sir.
My name's Don Sloan. I'm an avid sailor. I'm a member of the Cousteau Society. I love the outdoors, birds, deer, fish, everything. But I'm also an avid water skier. And we've been skiing back there for years. I started when I was 5 years old, 40-something years ago. We've skied through the channel. We've skied through the islands before the islands were even put back together, so you could actually go right through the slough. It was pretty cool. You can't anymore. I just want to say there's a couple things that we don't do as water skiers. The boats that we use are upwards of $70,000. They don't make wakes. We want the smallest wake possible. They don't make noise. We want to be quiet. Erosion-wise, they don't put out big wakes. So, you know, the banks of that channel through there are sloped, which is perfect for water skiing. The waves dissipate very quickly. We're not throwing these big, giant wakes like you see with the wakeboarders. That's not what we do. I own 2 kayaks. I like kayaking back there. It's great. Most of the safety concerns for us or when we come around the corner of the river and there's 5 kayaks abreast paddling down the middle of the river. There's tugboats going through there. There's jet boats. The jet boats go a lot faster than we do. And when the kayakers are doing that, they're going to get there's going to be a problem. It's like the bikers and the buses. You know, the big guy is going to win, so they need to be aware. And that's just a little bit of education. And in closing, I'd like to say also, I've got lots of time, but that's okay. I'll get
you
out of
here. You started the clock late.
That's okay. I'm done.
Mayor, you said you trust
She's,
her.
Oh, that's okay. I'm not going to disagree with her.
Somebody's messing with me.
Another thing that no one has really mentioned, and I hate to bring it up, but we pay our taxes. We pay our boat registrations, which go up every year. They support the marine people, the marine board. Kayakers don't. I own kayaks. They don't have to be licensed. So we should at least have a say.
Absolutely, and you're having it here. Thank you. Sir.
Mayor, commissioners, my name is Bill Egan. I'm the information officer for the Oregon Bass and Panfish Club, and I'm also their program director. I put some papers to your clerk to pass to you. It's Monroe's blog on the Ross Island Channel. He's got some good ideas there and some comments. There is a concern about erosion in the channel, but you're not going to get Ross Island out of there for who knows how long, and they tear it up every time they come out. In addition, the big blue tour boats tear in and tear out. They'll spin around in the middle of the channel throwing huge wakes, and I've seen them do the same thing in the lagoon. Those people are exempted. I'm not after these water skiers. I believe the channel should probably be slow no wake from at least the mouth of the lagoon on up around the rest of it. But it's something that the big wakeboarders do tear up with erosion. When we come to the lagoon, I've been going in there for over 40 years. We have a number of our club members that go in there and fish. We tried to work this out through riverkeepers so the public would have access to the lagoon, and we were told no, they wanted it flat, no motorized boats. There's no problem allowing the public access inside there on Slow No Wake. All the signage that is going to go up is going to be put up by the Marine Board. The Marine Board gets their revenue from registration on boats. In addition to that, we even offered to go to electric motors only inside, and we were told, well, that'll be our backup position in case we can't get what we want. You know, I see the deer. I see the eagles. I go fishing on the river. I'm on there 150 days a year, during the summer almost every day because, unfortunately, I'm retired because of my legs, but that doesn't stop me from running a boat. This group that's approached you about this represents a very small portion of the people in the Portland metropolitan area. And when you talk about boaters, they're probably 2% of the boating public. I just don't think it's right for one group to take something that should be for everybody. It's unfortunate, but that's the position we're in, and trying to work with them just hasn't worked. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Would the opponents of this resolution please stand up so we make sure we know you're here? Okay. Emily, could you come back up to the table? Maybe not. So the question was raised about fiscal impacts. Can you give us an answer for who's going to pay for signage and enforcement?
I don't have that answer right now. Typically, enforcement is done by Multnomah County Sheriff's Marine Division. Parks has agreements with them already for some patrols on our area, and they also look after Ross Island. And so we would have to look in and talk to the Marine Board about posting and signage.
They're the decision maker on this. We're expressing an opinion. They manage it as well.
Correct.
Okay. Is there any argument on either side? I think that was a good airing out of sort of both sides' concerns. Is there anyone who signed up that really wants to go forward and testify? Okay, please come forward. Good morning. Welcome to the Portland City Council. You need to only give us your first and last name, and you'll have 3 minutes.
My name is Mark Lawhead. I'm the owner of Portland Ski Boat Center on McAdam Avenue. I purchased a multi-million-dollar piece of property this summer. I've conducted a water ski school and a wakeboard ski school in that area for the past 30 years. So as I understand, I would be exempt also, so I could continue to conduct my water ski and wakeboard school in the back area, based on what I've heard. I've not been contacted by anybody about the situation. It would impact my business in a big way if I could not do that. And I am a taxpayer in Multnomah County, and I have been participating in athletic activities in that area for the past 30 years also, as well as it's where I conduct my business. And the reason there are so many water skiers and wakeboarders back there, as well as that's the reason I go back there, is because it's the smoothest body of water in the Portland area. And as Bruce said, we've not seen wrecks back there. I've not repaired boats at my dealership, which is right across the street from Willamette Park, from a wreck back there ever. As the gentleman over here said, they're trying to close a body of water for a very few amount of people. There's 10 months out of the year that virtually no boats ever go back there. I was back there yesterday. It would impact my business in a large way, but I guess I'm exempt, what I noticed you nodding your head, that would make it more dangerous because I can go back there, the jet boat can go back there. So these people who go back there from the rowers, they have to come through the busiest body of water in Portland to get there. So they can, if you shove us out there, it's going to make that area more dangerous, but they have to go through that area to get back there. They can't just magically put their canoe in that area. But long and short of it, I think it's safer now than it will be if this was to pass.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Hi.
Hi, good morning. My name is Deborah McQueen. I am the executive director for the Oregon Marine Trade Association. I'm here representing folks like this gentleman next to me. Our association, I guess, I just found out about this about a week ago. And so we're feeling a little left out of the process. The stakeholder that is going to be restricted and basically moved from that area wasn't brought to the table in any kind of a way with enough advance notice that we could actually work together on this. You know, we understand as an association, we have 100 members here in really the Portland metro area. We have thousands of jobs. The boating industry in Oregon is a $1 billion-plus industry. It's not less than monthly that there is a body of water that is put on the list for the Marine Board that no wake, no motors, no boats. And so we do need to work together. As a council, I would like to have you have all the information before you make decisions about displacing folks, because that's the issue. We are going to move them from one to another, and then from there to where. So we all need to work together, the buses and the bikes, the big boats and the little boats. We got to work together. And so coming at it as a defense is not the Oregon Marine Trade Association's best position. We'd much rather be in and say, all right, let's look at the body of water that we've got, and let's figure out how we can all play together. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Sir?
My name is Darren Halsey. I'm a Willamette Riverfront homeowner. And, you know, as much as I like to see, you know, the wildlife and everything on the Willamette and the usage for everybody, my concern with closing that, well, the reason, and it's been mentioned before, the reason that that area is crowded with powerboat users is the fact that, well, twofold. One is it's out of the wind. In the summertime, the wind blows every evening. Anytime people come out after work, that is the only smooth water you can find pretty much from you get up to the curves up around Lake Oswego on the lower Willamette. And the reason people have difficulty boating up there is partly because of some of the Marine Board's previous initiatives, which is boat away. Stay away from the docks. There's no docks behind Ross Island. It's a perfect place to stay away from people's private property, other, you know, and create less issues, create less hazards around the docks. If you displace the power boaters from there, you're going to push them into Lake Oswego area. And then we're going to be doing this again and again and again. It was already mentioned that this happened on the upper Willamette. Same sort of situation. Lots of docks. Lots of people that don't like the waves or the noise created by specifically wakeboarding boats. That seems to be the big issue. And you push people to other places. I mean, the industry is a huge industry with a lot of businesses, a lot of different boat dealers that sell those types of boats. You're creating an issue with them. And as far as a place for the, you know, the kayakers and canoers, there are other waterways besides downtown Portland to paddle your canoe. The Tualatin River doesn't have power boats on it. That's a great body of water that's relatively close. The upper Willamette is a wider area, tends to be a little less crowded with larger boats. It does have the wakeboard boats and stuff like that. But Mark mentioned here, it's you know, it is not filled with boats year-round. There's only a relatively short time in the summer, well, later spring to fall, that the weekends can get crowded. Weekdays are not crowded. After work isn't crowded. Same sort of situation with you have here behind Holgate Channel. There's no reason to displace the power boaters out of there because you want to create a two-mile stretch to paddle. There's all kinds of waterways around that you can paddle your canoes around. That two-mile stretch, a canoer is going to go back and forth for an hour. That's kind of silly. Besides the, besides that, the safety issues, you know, if you displace them into, you displace the boaters into other places, you're going to make it crowded on narrower portions of the river, specifically up around Lake Oswego and up toward Oregon City, where it is already narrower. There's a lot of rocks. You can't get near the docks. Mm-hmm. It's going to create its own problems.
Thank you for your testimony. So I've given, you can return to your seats. Thank you. I've given about equal time to both sides. Is there an argument, though, that anyone who signed up before has not heard? We have not had out on the floor yet. All right. Is there anyone again who's dying to testify that signed up or didn't sign up? I think we've had a good sort of both sides of the issue, about equal time, discussion on council. All right, then let's, Carla, could you please call the roll for this item?
Great. Thank you, everybody, for coming in and for putting this item on the agenda. It does go as it would go as a recommendation to the Marine Board, and so there'll be a further hearing there. But you may have noticed that I didn't sign on as a co-sponsor of the resolution, partly because I wanted to hear this kind of debate and for you to know that it makes a difference that you came in and you testified and you brought out some really good points. And it's good that we've had a public hearing at the Portland City Council, because obviously now everybody is aware that this proposal is going to the Marine Board, I think, next week. And so I'm hopeful that there would be more discussion before the Marine Board. This is very reminiscent of the dogs in parks issue, that the rights of one set of folks impinge on the rights of another set of folks. And I'm wondering if there might be some possibility for, like, off-leash hours, that the no-wake zone, particularly, there doesn't seem to be to be much of a question about the no-wake zone in the Holgate Channel. And the issue that's been raised today that I wasn't aware of is the use of the Ross Island Lagoon for young learning water skiers, wakeboarders, and such. And also the second issue I've heard today that I wasn't really thinking about before is the potential for decreased safety if non-motorized crafters are thinking that they are going to be safe, and then a jet boat or other commercial use comes in and creates a lot of wake. That's even worse. So I'm concerned about that. The resolution does support the city's broader Endangered Species Act response. We spent close to $2 million on construction at the Holgate Channel to help bring Spring Chinook back. And so when we're looking at the fiscal impacts, I think the relative cost of signs and their maintenance is outweighed by this huge expenditure, which does preserve the possibility of bringing the Spring Chinook back. And we have invested a lot of time and city effort in taking care of Ross Island, getting it back into city purview, and thinking of how it's going to be restored. So although I'm concerned that there hasn't been much of a discussion prior to this point, apparently, or that there hasn't been a consensus developed, I'm hopeful that when we do have the Office of Healthy Working Rivers up and running, that this would be the kind of issue that office could help coordinate between all of the different entities who are concerned. We've spent the last 2 months looking at all of the different entities who are concerned about the Willamette and the Columbia Rivers, and there are a lot of them. So I will work for that once we have the Office of Healthy Working Rivers up and running. But for now, because it's a recommendation to the Marine Board rather than an action that we're taking independently, I'm going to vote aye on the resolution.
Fish.
Thank you. I want to thank the Ross Island Vision Team for the work they've done and the hundreds of community meetings they've hosted throughout the city discussing a vision for Ross Island. And let's be clear, we are here discussing this issue today because it concerns Ross Island. This is not just any channel adjacent to any particular piece of dirt. This is Ross Island, and this city has said in its 2020 plan through parks, in its negotiations with Dr. Pamplin, in its establishment of a whole set of priorities, that Ross Island is different. And I've had the pleasure of taking a tour of Ross Island. I believe we were well within the 5-mile-an-hour limit. And it is astonishing how much wildlife has returned. It's an astonishing thing to see a bald eagle nest and to see other kinds of habitat. And we have made a commitment as a city to reclaim this treasure, and it's against all odds. And we're hoping that in time we can bring it back. And my understanding is that we may be the only city in America with a treasure like this in its backyard. So it's different. And we're here today because it's different. And I want to just address what a no-wake zone does and doesn't do. As has been made clear through the testimony, it is a speed zone for motorized watercraft. It would require motorized watercraft to travel at 5 miles an hour or less when passing through the Holgate Channel. It does not extend beyond the Holgate Channel to those who are concerned about its impact in other areas of the Willamette. It would not prohibit motorized watercraft from this area. It only requires them to reduce their speed. Let's say that again. It does not prohibit any motorized watercraft from entering this area. It simply says they must observe a reasonable speed. And it exempts commercial. And you've heard from my colleague.